Stardate 96838.87, aka Mike's birthday. Hey guys, we are the intrepid crew of the Star Trek Discovery Pod. I am your Kelvinverse Captain Grant, because we're in an alternate universe where our prime captain, Mike Moody, it's his birthday, as I just noted, and he decided that he doesn't want to do Star Trek on his birthday. What?
Apparently not.
What's wrong with him? Especially for this episode. Joining me,
Clyde Haynes.
And
Mariah Gossett.
Guys, you guys weren't here last week.
We were not.
And you missed out on a pretty fun episode. Yes. The Red Such Angel.
I can't believe I missed the therapy episode.
There was an actual therapist.
There was a therapy episode.
I cannot believe it.
Cornwell. Mm. Yeah, she came in and she actually goes, well, guess what? I actually dabble in a little bit of therapy. And everyone's like, that's what we've been needing
the entire show.
That's so great.
I just missed the fact that in one episode, I had an opportunity to say, Mariah was right. And Mariah was wrong. All in one episode with the identity of the Red Angel.
You sound like my now husband. That was why I was gone, guys. I got married.
Congratulations. That is so exciting.
Thanks.
As two married men ourselves, we know it's all joy.
It's all joy. All the time.
Yep.
It's lovely. Welcome to the joy.
Thanks.
We're not being sarcastic.
Nope.
I don't think. Although, you know, you can never really be sure.
Tell your spouses to not listen to the first half of this episode.
Don't listen to this episode.
Listen to the words I'm saying and not the tone in my voice. That's all I'm saying.
Speaking of this episode, this week we are talking about Season 2, Episode 11, Perpetual Infinity. And this is directed by Maja Vervillo. Hopefully I got that correct. And the writers are Alan McElroy and Brandon Schultz. Before we get into all that, I wanted to remind you guys, if you have been listening to this podcast and you want a little bit more, please go ahead and check us out at our website, StarTrekPod.com. You can follow us over on Twitter, StarTrekPod, as well. We have a Facebook page. You can just search for that. And if you guys want to help us out a little bit more, please go to Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. There you can make a per-episode donation. Give us a buck or two, probably two. It's going to be the best bang for your buck, because if you guys give us $2 an episode, which amounts to $8 a month, which amounts to no dollars in a couple weeks because we're nearing the end of the season, you guys will have access to our private Slack channel. And over there, you guys can talk with us about Trek. We can share theories after the episode and talk about what we're going to discuss for the next episode and share news and everything. It's a lot of fun.
We've been talking about Trek books this week, so on the Slack channel. So if
you... the GIF game is strong on the Slack channel.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Lots of funny GIFs. And so please, Star Trek, Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and make that donation. So we usually start off with a little thing called Hot Takes.
Hot Takes.
Yeah, there it is. And we're going to start with Mariah. What did you think of this episode?
Oh, man. So many... I had lots of emotions for this episode. I really enjoyed it, first of all, off of the top. There were some great one-liners that gave me lots of feelings. And then I have lots of just, like, crying emoji faces.
Yeah. It packed a wallop. I think that it had a big emotional payoff there.
Yeah. I think this really tied up a lot of loose ends for me and gave me a lot of, like, emotional closure on a few characters, and it made me excited that it wasn't another sort of huge cliffhanger ending, which always is something I'm a little like, I don't know, like I have mixed feelings about cliffhanger endings because I'm like, I just want to know now, tell me now, give it to me, give me all the information, give it, right. Yeah. So this week I felt like everything got tied up, not in like a perfect little bow, but we now know what everyone's like collective mission is again, rather than just trying to solve one little mystery. We're again trying to fix the universe.
Right. Clyde.
I love the fact that there were some holes that kind of got filled in this episode, and we kind of understand the Red Angel, and that mystery is pretty neatly like wrapped up. I felt some closure, some conclusion there. So I love that. You know, there's a lot of things I really did like about the episodes. I was watching it, and from beginning to almost the end, I was like, man, this is great. And then the end came, and there was just way too much, like, drama and hesitation that was driving me nuts. And I was like, "Arr." But ultimately, I would say I liked the episode quite a bit. It's just, you know, we'll dive into that.
Clyde, what?
Yeah.
No. That was...
Look, no.
That's so good.
No. Look, I felt like I was watching Burnham struggle with ejecting Arium from the ship again with this whole, no. And I'm like, the longer you wait, the more this control is going to get this. I know, it's your mom. She's good. You got to go. Like, she's like, no. I mean,
but it's your mom.
Yeah, but you know what you have to do. And her mom was saying, look, this is, you've got to do what you've got to do. And Burnham's just holding on. But
that's not how story structure works.
Yes, I know. And that's the problem I'm having with it. It was
what you do for...
It took me out.
They could have to be any other character, but it's her mom.
Yeah, it took me out of the moment, though, right? Like, I was fully invested. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm watching a TV show that has decided to poke at this one thing in a very dramatic way. That just didn't feel that authentic to me. I know. I'm heartless.
Where I have no heart for sibling relationships on television, mom relationships, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And this one gives us plenty. Everyone's got some mom drama.
So much.
Mama drama. Oh,
and I think the thing that I was really struggling with is they had this great moment, right? Like, it was this great moment of talking about I've always been there. And I was like, oh, I was like right there. And then it was followed by the, but I can't, but you must, but I can't. And I was just like, all right,
But she's been with her mom for like 45 minutes. I would be like that too if I hadn't seen my mom in 20 years and then you give me 45 minutes.
Yeah, but had she not hesitated, she could have gotten back in the suit and she would have had a chance to see her again. But all that hesitation.
That's hindsight, buddy. Fair. That's not fair.
That's more emotional guilt for her to deal with in a later episode with no therapist.
Yeah. I'm definitely much more in the Mariah camp.
I know.
Although I see your point. I don't feel I have any ability to have fair criticism in me anymore. I don't know. I agree that right at the top of this episode, I started writing lingering questions. I was like, is it her or her mom using the suit? Has that kind of working? Why did she go back to certain points in time? Is that going to be addressed? Is she a clone? Is Leland dead? Like, I had all these questions, and then they just started ticking everything off and just like answering it. I was like, sweet, that's exactly what I want. And then I was like, man, the past few episodes have had a really powerful climax. They can't sustain that. And then they do it again this episode. And each time I am just so surprised that I get caught up in it again. And I'm there for the action sequence, the desperation, the emotional payoff, all of it. It just packages in such a nice tight bow right at the end. And I'm really impressed with what they do there. So that's where we're at. We're going to go ahead and discuss all of this chronologically, as we usually do, linearly, I should say, not chronologically, because it's going to be a little bit of a problem with a time travel episode.
Timey-wimey.
Yeah. I did want to mention before we jump into that we have now added a new little element to our episodes. With each episode that we're going to discuss at the very end, we're going to nominate... I guess give an award to the favorite performance in the episode. We'll pick one of the actors. And
spoiler, it's always Stamets.
Always Stamets.
it's always Stamets. Just saying.
It helps that he's a Patreon subscriber.
And corrects us when we're wrong.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
Which I apologize for. I feel like I started that rumor in our podcast circle of there not being that many episodes left. I'm sorry.
Hey, I just felt like...
He's not actually listening.
I felt appropriately shamed
we got
in getting it wrong. So
yeah, it was shameful.
We were all embarrassed for you.
It was that scene in Game of Thrones with the bell just ringing behind us.
Shame!
So we're going to nominate our favorite performance in the episode, and we're going to ring a bell at Clyde. And then we're also going to say our nomination for our favorite behind the scenes, favorite crew element of the episode. So
spoiler alert, it's Stamets.
No, no. How are you going to keep giving it to that guy? Boy, someone tweets at you and...
I mean, look, I'm just kidding, no, but...
Sell your children.
Not that far.
And then we'll give honorable mentions. So if you guys listening in also have some people that you would nominate, either tweet at us. I think it would be fascinating to kind of see what the other viewers and / listeners are thinking about this. And you guys can also, if you're a Patreon patron, hit us up over there. It's fun to discuss. But... without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into this episode. We start off...
back in time.
With a full flashback.
Gotta go back in time!
I'm so glad you did that, because I wanted to.
We are at Doctari Alpha Research Station.
I thought you were going to say Doc Brown's lab there for a second.
And it seems that we are now getting our first look at the young parents of younger Michael Burnham, a.k.a. Mike. Her nickname's Mike.
Cute.
Of course it would be.
I thought it was good.
I love this, and I don't really know why. Like I said, up until a point, I was really into this episode, but the flashback of seeing... what really happened, I was just, like, riveted.
I was, like, real interested to see how far they were going to take it. I was like, are we going to see a murder in the first, like, 5 minutes?
I thought at the very least we were going to be inside the closet when it happened.
Yes.
And then maybe seeing that some other things and...
see blood pour under the door of the closet.
But they did it really well. Mm-hmm. Like, I was really impressed.
So, wait, I don't recall if they addressed, like, how does she escape but her parents die?
She said she sits in the closet the whole time and listens to them eat their dinner, and she just waits it out until they leave.
Yeah, she discussed that a couple episodes ago.
But they ate only her dad.
Well, they ate the dinner that they had prepared. She said they killed her parents and then ate their dinner that was on the table. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's implied that they ate them? Their dinner being her parents?
I didn't take it that way.
They sure ate Giorgio, right?
Didn't
Bok / Ash eat Georgia?
But I think that was in part because their ship was stranded and they were going to starve.
I don't know.
I don't know.
They were looking for this space timey-wimey suit, and then they just killed the people there instead and then ate their dinner.
I thought when Burnham was looking through the telescope that it was going to be showing the supernova, that she was like, we got to save for this supernova or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then later in the episode, Stamets mentions a supernova, and she's just triggered now. I'm like, oh, no, that is a word you cannot say around her, apparently.
I wrote a note because so she wakes up. It's a, you know, it's her, like, dream sort of sequence when she's in this, like, weird little 5-hour coma. But when she's having that, like, no, no, no moment, it looked straight up like the scene in Get Out where the maid is just like, no. And then, like, with the trigger word of supernova, I was like, oh, man, she's going to have a lot of Get Out moments this
episode. She's going to have a lot of Get Out moments.
This episode.
I did note that her mom, when she's, like, putting her in the closet, hands her a stuffed animal. I'm like, she's, like, 12 years old.
No, she was less than 11 because she said, I was there on your 11th birthday.
Well, she's, like, discussing advanced astronomy with her folks.
Hey, being a 10-year-old girl is complicated, okay?
I guess. Okay, I'll lay off. Anyway, it was a gripping cold open, I guess, for this episode. So I thought that was a pretty intense way of tying in the crazy time-traveling misadventures of Dr. Who?
Burnham.
Dr. Burnham. And then we jump back to Culber.
Well, I did like, before we jump there, that they just, like, gave her, they're like, you need to rest, but first go through all of your mother's personal diary. Like,
essentially,
here's all of her.
Don't get up, but read all of this stuff.
I mean, like, what's the running list of Burnham's trauma that she's gone on just, like, while we've been watching this show? It's so long.
Mm-hmm.
She lost Giorgio, who got
eaten. She started a war. She lost her entire career and was going to be imprisoned. Her boyfriend turned out to be
a Klingon who killed her mentor. Yeah.
Yeah. Like everything that seemed to happen to her.
Her captain turned out to be someone from the other universe. And then she, again, met her mentor, only to learn that her mentor likes to eat her best friend.
She just lost her friend Arium. She just reunited in a very uncomfortable way with her brother, and now her mom's back? Pile it on for her.
Don't forget she had to save Tilly from inside a cocoon.
Oh, yeah.
And then Pike looks at her and goes, you know what's going to be good for you? How about you read your mom's diary after you thought she's been dead for
20 years?
I actually do see his reasoning, though, in that it's like, here, this is something that's going to distract you for sure.
Okay.
And maybe help you process this emotionally slightly, maybe? I don't know. Maybe we should bring in the person on board who is actually a trained therapist now that there is one.
Right. Bring her back. We need more of Cornwall.
Why didn't we see her at all this episode? You think she might have...
Right, because she was pretty highly involved in this mission.
Yeah.
And where's Tig Notaro?
I don't know.
We haven't seen Tig Notaro.
I saw that she just gave an interview
since like episode 3 or something like that.
She should have been here this episode.
She's been in like literally like 2 episodes this whole season.
What a tease this is.
Like I thought we were going to see a lot more of Tig. But in that matter, Stamets only had like 3 or 4 lines the entire episode.
A lot of the...
Wait! Don't do that!
A lot of the cast had to go to the background for this episode.
I think Kayla just had a blink.
All just Star Trek nonsense lines.
I would like to point out that Culber threw in a line here. Okay, first off, Culber's back.
Yes.
Like, before they're like, that guy has got a lot of issues. We can't have him be Doctor. Just kidding. Get over here.
But they gave him a fancier doctor suit. It's a good little doctor suit.
But what happened?
They recognized his muscular body.
They were like, we're dressing for that now.
But what happened to the old doctor? Like, how do you feel like, oh, they just resurrected this guy from the dead, so I guess I'm demoted? Like, what happened to that person?
I don't know. But he throws in this line to explain how he totally botched it last week, where he was all like, look, there's 100% DNA match or whatever he was saying
before.
He was
like, but this one kind of DNA is what your 100% match was.
Yeah.
And that's why.
I would just like to point out that mother-daughter mitochondrial DNA could be also pretty close. He says pretty close, too.
Yeah.
Shenanigans, Culber.
I mean, look, give him some slack. Everyone thinks that the mother is dead. So you're not, it's not like you're thinking, oh, it's probably your mother. You're like, it's pretty close. It's got to be you. Or someone just like you, maybe just in the future, probably you.
Yeah, okay.
I get that. That wasn't a stretch for me.
Fair enough. So then they...
We jump to the computer going rogue.
We got a computer going rogue. What do you guys think about this?
I really enjoyed that scene because at first I was like, how did this thing like tie him up? This weird holograph. And then it just keeps getting like more and more advanced. And then I just put, robots. It's got little like arms and things that's like drilling into the back of his head.
The little
and, like,
nanobots that like
pouring into his body. I was like, that does not look fun.
It looked pretty cool though as it crawls across his face through his veins. And
it was good.
So here's the thing that I'm thinking, and this is my big theory, right? Is that the minute that the computer control says struggle is pointless, I immediately thought the Borg. Resistance is futile. And one, especially as you start to see these veins in Leland's face. And I'm wondering, is this the precursor to the Borg?
Which one?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. Which one are the Borg?
We haven't seen any Borg yet in Discovery, but it was from Voyager.
Yes, and then TNG.
And TNG, yeah.
Yeah, and the movies. It's like the big bad villain.
They're kind of like cyborg humans, right? Is that what the Borg comes from?
They're humanoid, and their goal is to assimilate every society to become part of the collective, right? So they're basically the collective. Exactly.
Are they kind of like a hive mind then?
They are a hive mind.
Mm-hmm. Like ants and stuff?
And they're kind of like Highlander in the fact that there can only be one, and that one being them.
Okay.
But they're also super advanced technologically.
Are they the pasty looking dudes? Like they can't look like Pinhead without the pins? Is that
kind of, yes, yeah.
Okay.
There's like a famous picture of like Picard who gets like partially
similar. Locutus, yeah. Yes.
All right.
You're making me go into like full Star Trek like nerddom.
That's okay.
Talking through this.
There might be one or two listeners that are unfamiliar with Trek like I am that are listening to this. I don't know. Probably not.
But I just looked at this and said, oh my goodness. Like, is this what we're seeing? Like, are we seeing the
origins of the Borg?
The origin of the Borg.
That could be. That's interesting because the idea that there was this dystopian future or. Not even like what's beyond dystopian, Armageddon future where there's no life, there's only control
yes.
that exists.
But because control doesn't get all of the data,
right.
It becomes this like, ooh, no, everyone just needs to be like us.
See, Mariah, you're there with me.
I'm right there.
Yeah.
In fact, it is also interesting that they can transfer control via these nanobots, and they have that line where they're talking about like, you know, we were able to work with some other people like Arium, but given that you are a human, you're much more difficult to figure out, but we're going to give it a shot with you, Leland.
Right, and Leland becomes the first Borg. The Borg King, I guess.
I really appreciate that we now have a face of a villain. Again, in this show.
Yeah.
Because in the first season, it was kind of Vok.
It was definitely Vok. And then.
And then and it then, became Pi. What's his name?
Lorca.
Lorca. And the mirrorverse, Georgia.
Yeah, at some point.
For a bit. So we had these bad guys, but then they kind of shifted how we were rooting for them.
Funny, all the bad guys became good guys. You're either killed or, you know, in Giorgio and Vok/Ash's case, you become a good guy.
You live long enough to see yourself become the hero, I think is how the quote does not go. but then this season, it's just been them kind of chasing this mission of these red dots, but there wasn't necessarily a villain. There wasn't even really an understanding of what a looming threat there was. And now we have Leland, and he is definitely the face of a villain. And prior to this, I was just kind of like, I don't know how I feel about him. In fact, he really reminds me of Grant Ward from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. In that the character until they just fully embraced this guy's a villain. And then I'm like, now it's a fascinating character.
Leland is so much better than Grant Ward.
Grant Ward was boring until, I mean, that show is garbage.
I was like, I'm going to reel it back in. This is not whatever this other show is.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Fair enough. I'm just saying, bad acting is bad acting. I don't mind Leland's acting as much. Yeah, that's his portrayal, but...
Okay, well, let's move on. Yeah. The Red Angel suit looks awesome. We get to see how Mama Burnham puts on the suit and zips back in...
That was pretty awesome.
Zips forward in time and then kind of gets locked in there. Yeah, and she gets trapped in the future.
Quantum leap.
Yeah, or that kid from Umbrella Academy. I got to stop referencing other shows. Stay on topic. Okay.
There could be one. You just got to come back around.
Here's the thing. At least you stayed in the sci-fi vein. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm.
At least you're there.
So through these mission logs that Burnham's going through of her mom, we start ticking off some of these mysteries that we weren't really sure about. Like, for example, it seems that she went to Terra Elysium specifically for the purpose of doing an experiment on whether or not she could manipulate time. And so the whole taking them and jumping them to another planet is kind of messed up in this context now. I mean,
they were going to die.
They were going to die. She saved them.
She did. Mm-hmm. But she also just kind of abandoned them to their own isolated planet to be like, here you go. And... it's fascinating that now we have an explanation for why she did that. And it was just one of these test cases where she could see that, oh, time is fluid. I have the ability to manipulate certain things like that. So let's see how much further I can go and if I can actually stop control.
Yeah, and I thought it was fascinating that we got this explanation of of the uniqueness of Spock and why that was relevant. Mm-hmm. When you look at the fact that it really came down to the fact that everything that Spock saw as a weakness, his being half Vulcan, being half human, having dyslexia, uniquely qualified him to being the only person who could communicate and understand the Red Angel. That was amazing.
That was really fascinating, too. Coincidental, it seems, but fascinating.
Well, I thought it was just one of those, another one of those holes that they filled in, right? We'd been wondering why him, why couldn't anyone else kind of see these? What was the point? And we got that answer. And, you know, I always like it when we look at someone's weaknesses as the key to solving the puzzle. So,
yeah.
She also tried to destroy the sphere, which is why the sphere was imploding. And then our Discovery crew actually did the wrong thing and transferred all the data onto their ship, preserving that knowledge, which still made it a liability that control could get it, which was kind of a fascinating look at how time is adverse to correction, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that we got to listen in on this discussion of, well, should we get rid of it? Is it worth the risk? Oh, but it's everything. And it's like, yeah, but it'll also destroy everything. And I just thought it was interesting that you've got people, even like Saru, who's going, we have to preserve it. And it's like, okay, well, you preserving this is going to end everything.
Yeah, and I think in a classic sort of Star Trek way, they're having that conversation of like, when technology becomes too powerful, what do we do with it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that's something that's mirrored a lot that's kind of going on now politically with like how much data is available. What do we do with all this data that we have? Is it responsible for one company to have access to all of this data?
No. Sorry. Had something in my throat there. I'm okay now.
You know, so I think they're...
On that note, we do have a Facebook page if anyone wants to check it out. Or if you want to quit your account, we completely agree.
But yeah, so I think, you know, in another sort of classic Star Trek way, we're seeing those sort of present day conversations being brought into the larger plot line, which I think the show has done for a long time.
There's also the element where the team is arguing about whether or not they should delete the sphere's data. And I like seeing that Michael just goes, no, if my mom said we should get rid of it, let's just do that.
Let's do that, yeah.
So, I mean, this kind of goes in conflict with what you were saying at the beginning of the episode, Clyde, about not liking that Burnham's not doing what her mom says and, like, just sending her back into the future.
No. I was, like I said, I was good up until, like, the last 5 minutes of the show. Like, it was great. Like, I was okay, we're making decisions.
I agree
decisions.
Where she should.
Yeah.
She should have taken her mom at what she's saying, just like she did earlier when she was just like, yeah,
but emotionally,
okay,
it's a lot
that.
Easier to be like, oh, mom said to delete the hard drive versus mom said send her back to the future.
It all comes down to this one thing, right? And I think this is what we're getting with Burnham. And I find it fascinating that when we first met Burnham, it was all about logic. Like everything we saw about Burnham was logic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was, well, I have to mutiny Giorgio on this ship because logic dictates that this is the right thing to do. And now
I think it's because she feels logic has failed her because of that.
I think it comes down to ultimately Burnham wants to do what Burnham wants to do. Burnham going to do what Burnham want to do. And so when Burnham's like, oh, she uses logic to get what she wants. And in this case, it was mom said to do this. This is what I want to do. So we're going to destroy it.
True.
Later on when it's, well, the logical answer is we got to send her back. It's, well, that's not, I don't want to do that. Right. With Arium, it was, oh yeah, we should eject her into space, but I don't want to do that. So I'm not going to do that. That is what I'm seeing with Burnham is ultimately Burnham's going to do what Burnham's going to do.
Her mom obviously came to this particular point in time after it's revealed that she's been watching her daughter's life, like checking in all the time, but not
creepily. Yes.
Not adding that. Not creepily. It's her mom.
No.
Not adding that to the mission logs, obviously. But
how much does she see with Burnham and Vok? I'm just asking.
Mom, give me a heads up. The dude was a Klingon.
What I really want to know around that. I mean, that's a good point. Why didn't you know? How you're not going to tell somebody? But how did she see all this? Right? You think that if Burnham was doing these things, especially some of these intimate things, right? These it's one thing to be sitting in a crowd doing a graduation. It's another thing to be able to see Burnham read Alice in Wonderland aloud in the privacy of her own room. Like, how did she see all this stuff?
Creeping outside the window like Sting. Don't do that, Mom. Come on.
I had the next thing, right, is we kind of see Leland going rogue once he's been implanted with the nanotechnology, right?
Mm-hmm. And the conversation with, like, Giorgio.
Of, like,
Ash.
You can't love her. You guys love, you know, being like, you and Tyler love Burnham too much. And so you're blind to all of this.
I thought
he was
suddenly much more effective at being manipulative.
Right?
He was, which was should have been Giorgio's first giveaway.
Right? She was just like, wait a second.
Yeah. He went from being incompetent to really competent.
Exactly. And hold up.
Like, oh, that was a great stretch break. Now I know exactly what I'm doing.
Right. Did you just form a complete sentence? Bullshit. You're a Borg. Yeah. I know it. Yeah.
I felt bad for Leland, though. Like, I was genuinely like, I don't want that to
happen.
His
humanity has now been just, like, crushed under robot.
Yeah, I mean, technically, he's dead. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'm sure you're not going to survive your veins just being pumped through with nanotechnology.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Meanwhile, Michael, I can't just say Burnham now.
You gotta say Burnham or Dr. Burnham. We know you.
Burnham or Dr. Burnham. Mm-hmm. Dr. Burnham.
Doc B.
Doc B. Is that really?
No. Just wants to talk to dreamy-eyed Pike.
She requests Pike. Yeah, only wants to talk to Pike. And,
doesn't everybody?
Like, and Mikey's
doesn't
feeling.
Want a little one-on-one time with Pike.
Pretty burned.
Tilly definitely does.
You know what? Also, not a lot of Tilly in this episode.
She had like a half a line, and they basically said, shut up.
It is weird. So they're doing something with Tilly where they have her say things that, like, to us, the viewing audience, is cute, but they make everyone around her in the ship just seem like they're always annoyed with what she says.
But it would be like if you have that friend that in your friend group who says, like, things that you find annoying because you're together with them all of the time. But then when you have, like, an outside friend who joins your group and just, like, they seem like such a fun person. I really like them. And they're like, cool, spend, like, the next 10 years of your life with this person. And
that's
then talk
exactly
to me.
It.
I'm that person. No one likes me after a while.
We might all be that person.
We might all be the Tillies.
Yeah. And then they have the discussion of, okay, there's a ticking time clock of you gotta send
the gravity
Doc
is gonna
B
stop
back. Yeah. And Pike's like, oh, I recognize the urgency, but first you have a little powwow over here with Culber and Spock.
Now
and
you're
Burnham.
Understanding where I'm coming from.
Then I'm gonna go talk to Stamets for a bit. Also, when he's talking to Culber, and Culber is like straight up saying, like, oh, you know what? Maybe Dr. Burnham's just a completely changed person. I was like, man, you are projecting way too much here. Everyone knows this is not, once again, this is not about her. It's about you. It's like Stamets and Culber are having this, like, passive-aggressive off where they're not saying how they feel. They're just trying to channel into everyone else feeling that way.
I did put, because I think in the scene that's where they're watching, like, we were just referencing the, like, Spock is the only one who could have seen the Red Angel because of all of the things that went right. And I just put in quotes, you're our only hope, Obi-Wan.
Exactly.
Because it was just, like, phrased in such a way of, like, Spock was the only one who could ever see me. And I was like, okay, but could you have tried a little harder with some other people? It might have worked to communicate a little bit more effectively.
I mean, hey, there's a whole planet of Betazoids who might be able to empathically understand what's going on.
Right.
I mean, Spock's not the only half-human, half-telepath. I mean, there's a few others out there.
But Spock is the only one that also has dyslexia. Apparently, and is also semi-related to her
and
daughter.
And lives with her daughter, yes.
So Pike talks to Sonya Song, a.k.a. Dr. B.
A.k.a. Kima
A.k.a.
from The Wire.
Kima Greggs. And we finally get to, like, see more scenes with her interacting with our current-day crew, and it's great. And she's the all-seeing, all-powerful Oracle who can just be like, look, Pike, I've seen your future and it's sad. And I was like,
not good.
That was so brutal.
And he just kind of rolls off of it like, whatever.
I'm going to go back to the ship now. I can't talk to you anymore. You're depressing.
But that also kind of brought me back to thinking about, like, why did she come to them at this particular point in time? Like, she could have come later in their future, which makes me think, like, something happens where they die, but she needed a point in time where Burnham had a large degree of authority on one of the most powerful ships in the Discovery.
Well, she keeps coming to them when she keeps coming to Burnham when Burnham's in jeopardy. And so the fact that she was about to die, asphyxiate, mm-hmm. she showed up. Like, the truth of the matter is Burnham should have been dead, like, decades ago, but every time she's about to die, her mom saves her.
So here's this is the only problem with, like, and I am sure this is a conversation the writer's room had, is, like, when you're dealing with time travel, like, wouldn't have the most effective way to make sure that, like, the time travel, you just needed to make sure the ability to time travel never happened, like, that the Klingons didn't start trying to figure out time travel, so then the suit didn't exist, so then control theoretically wouldn't exist because the Klingon War wouldn't have happened.
So what you're saying is you got to make sure that the flux capacitor is never invented and that you never bring an almanac back from the future.
Yes.
Got it. That would work.
But she's got an emotional attachment to her kid. I like that she tries to just be, like, very dispassionate when she's talking to her Michael about this. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, in such a logical way, says, look, we can have this meeting that I would actually love to have where we reconnect in a month for me and maybe 10 years for you, but
it'll happen eventually.
Yeah, it's going to happen sometime for me because I have to fix this problem first. This is the most pressing thing. And I've seen you die like a billion times. It's a galactic graveyard.
That's got to be really tough, right? To see your loved one die over and over and over again. Like, that was one thing that I thought really came across is I don't want to call it this dispassionate feeling, but this
she has, like, a Sisyphus complex, you know?
Yeah, like, she has been rolling this rock up the hill over and over again. But also, I think when you've seen, like, I can't imagine what the first time watching her daughter die was like. But
after a couple times,
you're like, okay, I see how this happens. She died. I got to go back and make it so that she doesn't die and keep doing this. But so when she sees her, it's probably kind of like, yeah, like I see you every other day in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys make of when she's, like, revealing, like, what all she jumped in time to kind of intervene, like, the three times? When they ask her about the seven red dots,
right,
she's like,
she still doesn't know what they are.
She's like, I don't know what that is. So do you think that's something that she still does in the future as, like, a kicking off point? Or do you think that's control doing it? Or maybe it's Michael Burnham using the suit? Or what are the seven dots then? That kind of,
I don't know,
begins the mystery.
No idea.
There's some other force then. So, I mean, as much as they give us a lot of answers,
My first
just like
thought,
Lost, they give us more mysteries.
My first thought was that it's like it's the time stream, right? It's something in there that's being disrupted by all of this time travel. Because if we know anything, we know that you can't just, you know, use time all willy nilly without there being some repercussions,
right?
Right. Every sci-fi show that has time travel in it, you can destroy the time stream, kind of and I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that there's some element there that has been impacted by all this time travel.
It's funny because they act like it's so revolutionary that she has a time travel suit. But in the first season, our Discovery ship can also travel through time through the mycelial network. It can do it. It did it. I don't think they know how they did it, but they did it.
Pike knew how to do it.
Pike did. And then remember that one weird spore landed on him or something? Mm-hmm. Or, like, something weird happened when he kind of fell through that red hole in the Mirrorverse? So maybe he's going to come back.
I hope not. But to your point, though, you're right. As a crew, who has literally time traveled themselves. Mm-hmm. Though I keep asking myself, when is someone going to clue Pike into
what's going on?
What's really going on, right? Like, you're commanding a ship and everybody's got this inside joke you don't know about. That's, I don't know, kind of major. But this is a crew who has literally time jumped. They jumped back in the future at the end of the war, right? And so with all of this, they do seem a little surprised that, you know, there's this red angel that's time traveled. They should be like, yep. Yeah. We used to do that.
She's probably doing something with mushrooms.
Yeah.
In there, yeah.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
So they decided to jump the sphere into the future. For a second there, I thought, is Discovery going to save everyone else by jumping their ship with that data into the future? But I guess they just said, oh, we'll just transfer that data onto that suit and then cast it in just perpetual infinity into the future.
It's clear nobody on this ship had that thought.
Here's my other question.
Good thought, though, Grant.
They cast that thing continually into the future, right? It wasn't that they were just jumping right back to that same time point.
No. It's infinity.
So her mom is lost traveling through time. She didn't jump back to that planet, did she?
Say what you were trying to say. Her mom lost in space.
Lost in space, lost in time.
But no, I thought because they didn't get to do it correctly that it just went back to where she was, but now the suit is disabled.
Okay.
I thought it just went back to where her little home planet
is. To the anchor and that the suit may be traveling forward. Here's what I think we should do for our next episodes. I think we should issue like a podcast bingo, right? Where we just put a bunch of...
Like a little card.
Like a card with a bunch of sci-fi references on there. And every time we say something like Lost in Space, like people can just check it off. It'll be like podcast bingo.
And the first one to mark bingo gets and a in weird the middle, prize.
In the middle on every card would be Lost because Grant can't go an episode without a Lost reference.
I just want to see, I want an Iron Man scene with Dr. B on the planet making her new suit. Like, just like she's like trying to like smelt metals.
I also thought it looked a little bit like Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I did too.
Right? I totally felt.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did write down one of my favorite one-liners of the entire episode, which is like, Hamlet. Hell yeah. Right.
I was going to say, one of mine was, time is savage.
Ooh, or what about Spock going, I like science.
Oh, that was later. Yeah. I have that written down.
I'm jumping ahead.
That was like an I love lamp, but I like science.
They had some really great one-liners in this.
We're kind of jumping around here a little bit.
Sorry, guys.
But Leland gave Ash Ash was like, you know what? I'm not going to use your little clicker thing to get that data. And then Leland goes, all right, that's cool. Hey, you made the right call. Or something weird like that. Like,
I get it. It's not in your heart.
Yeah. Like, I'm being insubordinate. That's cool, buddy. I'm going to go get the
evil person to do it.
That's fine. Not a biggie.
It's interesting. Ash didn't go, that went a little easier than I thought.
Right.
But let's talk about Ash and his role in this episode and then a little bit more like his role this season.
He dies well. I was happy. No, I'm kidding.
I thought they might actually kill him for a second there.
For a brief second. Yeah, and then almost immediately after
there's
that.
There's an evac pod.
There's an evac pod.
They made him far too fascinating a character with his whole, like, I'm Klingon in a human suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they rolled the previews for next week, and it was like, I knew it.
He's coming back full force. But, I kind of enjoy the dynamic between Tyler and Giorgio this episode. Like, I'm enjoying this, like, weird, like, ooh, we're Section 31, but we're also going to scheme against ourselves and, like, against this new weird captain that we're not quite sure who he is anymore.
It was cool that we can kind of root for both of them now.
When he's all like, why are you talking to me on a secure channel? And she's like, you know exactly why.
Well, I think you're absolutely right there, Grant. We've been looking for a reason to root for Giorgio since the beginning, right? I get that she is a Terran, right? Which typically means she's terrible. And she's done all this. You like that, Terran?
That's
terrible.
Good. I'm smiling.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Easy things for him to remember.
But I think because she's Giorgio, right? And even more than that, because she's Michelle Yeoh, right? You want to root for her. You're give me a reason to root for her. I don't care that she's evil.
You a reason.
And then they've given us a reason. And they've started to step that up kind of episode by episode because she keeps kind of still being that mentor to Burnham and giving and tipping her off and say, it's not my place to tell, but I think you want to talk to Leland about your mom. Like, she keeps doing these things.
I'm not going
to
be a total mom, but I'm going to be that aunt that just like pushes you and nudges you in the right direction.
Exactly. And so
buy you booze if you want.
Yeah, it's like the cool aunt. But I'm a cool mom.
But she also buys you meth, so it's kind of like fucked up aunt.
She's the aunt that might stab you if you don't do what she says. But I think what we get here is this moment where it's like, okay, we've taken Ash, who we all secretly believe in. We know he's a good guy.
All of us.
Somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there, right? He's sacrificed all this stuff for her, and he's more Ash than he is Vok. And now they're teaming up. That's the team that we want. We want that team, and now we've got it.
Yeah. I think that with them needing an individual who could have an emotional tie to the Discovery team already as like shorthand for building conflict and also have them tethered to Section 31, it was a good call to weave in Ash's plot into that and make him a person who's got dual purpose, a person who's kind of not a turncoat, what's a double agent of sorts, and you're not sure, is he on our team side, is he on the other team side? And
he's always on Burnham's side.
Yeah,
but he's always on Burnham's side, and I think they've done a great job of making that feel genuine, that his affection for her is something that I buy into when there's certain other elements of the dynamic that just seem to be servicing the plot.
Fair.
I'm like, I buy into that they like each other and that he believes in her because he always seems to have her back. It's consistent.
It's almost needy in the way that loving Burnham is his holding on to this Ash persona that he has. Right? Because I think without that, he's a lot less Ash and a lot more Vok trying to find his new identity.
Doesn't it kind of feed into who Vok was as well? Vok was a sycophant of sorts, basically.
I would say
he just needs
he really likes to latch on to someone who's better than him.
And sounds parasitic, actually.
And before he had that Tuvok guy or whatever his name was, but now he's got
Tkuvma.
There you go.
Tuvok is somebody very different.
But now he's got Burnham, and I think that it may have started as a bit of an infatuation, but there's a genuine love there.
I think you're onto something. I think that the Vok personality does like to latch on to it's very loyal, right? Mm-hmm. He was loyal to Tkuvma. He was loyal to Laurel. And now he is like intimately and passionately loyal to Burnham.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump over to there's one other line where Ash makes a suggestion to the science team about like, if you guys just need more energy, I can just throw you guys more energy. And Stamets just like shuts him down with like an Isaac Newton joke.
There was a lot of physics jokes.
Yeah, where he's basically like, shut up, you dumb.
That's my favorite law of physics. Do you want to know my first favorite law? Shut up, Tilly.
No, Tilly. No one wants to know.
And then they also tied in why they have the dark matter on the ship. So a lot of these loose threads are all culminating. Mm-hmm. The dark matter now was going to be used as a counterbalance for them creating this sort of supernova channel that would allow them to...
For them to have some Star Trek nonsense to make their plan work.
Right,
exactly. It was nonsense. But at the same time, I'm like,
if we beam her up using the dark matter,
we'll be able to keep Dr. B here on the planet with us.
I mean, the only thing that they're missing is the engineer coming up with this at the last minute and cobbling something together. They kind of have Stamets do it, But it's like, Tig, this was the perfect time for you to go.
No, if I just duct tape this to this little exactly. piece of bubblegum, we've got it.
Yeah.
But then again, they didn't even have time for our other main players this week. I mean, it was a lot that they had to do in this episode.
But what is Star Trek without an engineer on an intercom going, I can't give her more energy, Captain.
I don't know.
I can do it. Just give me a moment. I think I got it. Like, it's always the engineer who's going to do it. And, you know, we're missing that.
They're just a whole crew of engineers.
Yes, they are.
When Dr. Burnham talks to Georgiou, finally.
Vanity versus vanity talk here.
Right. The moment where she says, oh, you will always sacrifice for Michael Burnham. To Georgiou, and Georgiou's like, you don't know me. And I was like, oh, that is fascinating, because of course she knows this is the mirrorverse,
right?
Georgiou, and her like illuminating that aspect of her is kind of one of those cheats that, like,
I was like, does she really, or are you putting this into her brain to make her think this is true because you want it to be true?
That's also a neat idea.
It also made me wonder if she was about to die.
I know. With that fight scene, I was like, oh, is this the end?
He's about to snap that neck. That's what I was thinking. I was like,
he pulled her hair. I was ready for the rings to come off, the earrings to come off.
Yeah, she was ready.
So she's on that ship, and Ash escaped, and all the rest of Section 31 got blown up, right, at the end?
Just everyone on the planet. The ship didn't blow up.
I thought they blew up the, because that's where.
No, they didn't blow up the ship.
They blew up the facility on the planet.
Oh, was Ash down on the planet?
No.
No, but the ship warped out.
It hit its warp signature. It basically went stealth and left.
Ah.
But somehow Ash escaped before that.
Pulled himself onto an escape pod? Okay, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, Ash.
As he fainted, just going, Leland!
Apparently, he didn't need to say anything else. And he had plenty enough energy to
Ash
get into
out.
Yes.
So what'd you guys think of the scene where Doc B was telling Michael that she's been watching over her this whole time?
Oh my God, I cried so much.
Yeah?
I definitely did not cry. I will admit that. No, I thought that scene was touching, and it was, I was waiting for something, because I think all we had gotten from Dr. Burnham up until then was this cold, kind of aloof and distant, like, I'm trying to get to this mission. That's all I've got. And this was the first time that we got this, like, this emotion, this compassion that you would expect from your mom. And I was like, great, this is going to be a great thing. And then they're going to say, I don't want you to go, but I have to. All right, I love you. I'll find you. And they were going to be off, and I was going to be good with that. So I kind of liked that moment quite a bit. I thought it was caring, and we needed it.
And I think the reason they had to draw it out, though, a little bit was because she had been so, like, that wall had been built up. And she kind of used this, you know, Dr. Burnham used this mission of hers to, like, get rid of control, to sort of focus herself away from missing her family and missing her daughter grow up. And then now she's actually face-to-face with her daughter, not just, like, creepy watching through a window or whatever was happening. And is like, oh, I need to tell you that I have tried to be your good mom, and then, like, had all of the emotions and the feels. And then, you know, if you're gonna, when you first meet your child again after 20 years, be like, I'm a cold person and I only care about my mission. JK, here's all of my emotional dumpster fire right here for you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course you don't want to put this dumpster fire out, because it's your last little remaining remnant of this relationship. So I don't know. I got the back and forth. It was like the Titanic moment where it's like, I'll never let go.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
you can imagine how I felt about that moment too.
It was really good.
I liked it.
The fact that they contrasted it earlier in the episode with the friction that she was giving to Michael was a great payoff. And, you know, there's something primal and innate in all of us that we can relate to, or at least we want to all relate to a mother's passionate love for their child.
Like, yes. I can lift the car off of you, and like, you know, kind of thing.
There's been other episodes where this show might not have been as successful in trying to get us to emotionally relate to particularly powerful moments, right? They're trying to sell something to us, and you Clyde and Mike have complained about like not really feeling that connection to certain moments, especially earlier in the season. And this one, for me, I was like, yeah, you guys just introduced this character, this mom. I don't know much about her, but I bought into all of that. And I think Sonya Stone was just brilliant casting.
Amazing.
I love that actress. She plays so well with Sonequa Martin-Green, and I mean, also how Sonequa Martin-Green played that role. It just helped the whole thing. It worked perfectly.
It helps that they actually do look a little alike, because you immediately go, I believe that's her mom. Like, I absolutely believe that's her mom.
Great casting.
It was. And that doesn't take away from the fact that Sonya Songs is an amazing actress. Mm-hmm. And so her delivery of these of the writing, which I admit, I think was fantastic up until the last 5 minutes. I thought it was great. And so that scene where she's telling her, and they're emoting between the two of them, between Sonya and Sonequa, like they killed that scene. Like I said, I was so in. I was watching. Like everything else kind of faded, and I'm seeing this moment. It was just I'm back to this Burnham going, I can't do it, I can't do it. And I'm like, am I watching a soap opera? Because they did CBS did just roll this commercial for all the soap operas that you can get on CBS All Access. And I'm like, is that what I'm watching? It just took me out. But up until that moment, I thought it was perfect. Like, I literally thought it was perfect.
Well, once she says to Michael, this is what needs to happen, and outlines all of her emotion, I just knew that, well, that means we're never going to see your character again. Yes, nope. Definitely not
exactly.
Getting saved.
No.
That can't happen in the storyline anymore.
No.
It's that whole thing of if there's a heist movie, and if they tell you what the plot is, it's not going to work. But if they say, I have a plan, and then they cut to the next scene, their plan's going to
work.
That's
right.
Always how it works. If they tell you the plan, that's only not so that they can say, nope, never mind, not going to happen.
Or yeah. We're going to do a twist, and the plot is revealed later.
Exactly. So then we get the big action sequence, which...
so good.
Yeah, all the shit hits the fan.
I mean,
Leland becomes a super soldier,
and right, like and none Georgia of the phasers like hit him, and then the robots like rebuild him or something.
It's definitely
it
Terminator.
Crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it's interesting that you have all the security personnel, right? And he's just dispatching the security personnel like nothing. Like, he's snapping necks. He's throwing people.
He's not just human anymore.
Exactly. But when it comes to Giorgio's got like, well, I'm a super soldier too. And then now it's a fight scene. I'm just thinking, I don't know who's training the Star Trek security people, but somebody needs to be fired. Like,
isn't that just like the stereotypical, like the old red shirt theory?
It pretty much. It's like, hi, my one sole purpose on being on the away mission is to keep everybody safe. Why do I die first? Right? Like, I'm terrible at my job if that happens. Right?
Well, but you're also the first target. You're the first threat. And so eliminate you.
Well, the other thing is, like, when he beams down, at first they don't know he's a threat, yeah. Right? You mm-hmm. know? Because well, they're just like, oh, you're that dude from that creepy ship.
Here's the deal. Somebody has beamed down that you have not expected. Hey, here's a clue. Turn around. Turn around. Pay attention.
Well, maybe people were beaming in and out like the whole time, like doing science shit in there.
You're a security person. You should be suspicious. Like,
you weren't on the manifest.
I don't want to call her brace face, but
Non
hit behind a post. Like, she was like, oh, something's wrong. Like, that's what I'm talking about. She seems to know what she's doing. The rest of her team, not a good look.
She's got to whip him into shape.
Oh, did we not mention the hands on the electric glass thing, the little moment?
No, we have not.
Oh, yeah.
The mom and daughter thing. Isn't that a
hand-to-hand.
It's a prison
Wrath
thing.
Of Khan thing or whatever? Or like, what's the one where Spock's dying and they, like him and Kirk, put their hands on the glass because like Spock's going to die?
I think that's from an Abrams movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the other one. I must have seen it because I saw the Abrams movie.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
I thought it was an interesting moment. I was just thinking, doesn't that hurt? But
you emote through pain.
I think if you're at this moment and you realize that this is it, right? And Grant, to your point, at some point, the realization that, like, the likelihood of us getting together and us being able to break the anchor and you coming and live in our time is slim.
Like, so the science is already shaky.
Yeah, it was shaky to begin with. And now you've got Leland running around trying to shoot people.
Yeah.
I thought that that was a moment that was well-deserved.
Do you think Leland gets away on the Section 31 ship?
Yes.
Yeah. He's not exploded on the planet.
Nope, he's absolutely away.
He's gotta continue his reign.
So yeah, there was a transporter and the ship's going away. The ship wouldn't get away, and because he's an AI, I mean, even if Leland's actual body
is dead,
I'm sure the AI has backed the up some of it. Yeah.
No, guys. Okay, I pulled up a picture. This scene from Wrath of Khan, where Spock's dying in the glass, and he puts his hand on the glass. And then Kirk puts his hand on there, and then they have the whole funeral for him, right? Am I crazy, Wrath of Khan?
It's been a long time since I've seen
that. Not crazy.
Okay.
Not crazy.
With the hands. Okay, that's all I meant. I just thought it kind of reminded me of that scene. It's like, I remember one thing from Star Trek.
We want to make sure we validate that one memory you have there. Yes.
It was correct.
You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
I don't know that this scene was an homage to that, but yes, you're
anytime people put hands on glass with each other, thinking one's going, they're never going to see each other again.
Oh yeah, no, that's a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was like saying that's a Vulcan goodbye instead of a Vulcan hello. That was a Vulcan goodbye.
So with Leland on the run, do you guys think that this is going to lead into that Section 31 show? Like, would it be Georgiou on a quest to reclaim Section 31 and take over it?
I mean, I don't know. Based on the little, like, preview for next week, we're going to have some sort of battle going on with them. And then we're also going to the planet where Ash's baby is and, like, all this
baby mama drama.
Stuff. I don't know if this is going to lead to that. I am constantly trying to figure that out, though. As I'm watching Section 31 interact with one another, and I'm watching Georgiou, and I'm watching Ash.
I mean, how far in production are they with it?
I don't know, but I'm looking for these clues.
Where's it going to drop us in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's talk about the last scene. Spock comes into Michael's room while she's kind
being of a nice little brother.
He was good being a good bro, right? And he's like, look, let's play some chess. We'll work out your shit. Everything's going to be okay. And I thought it was kind of a nice scene.
I thought that was a great closing scene. Mm-hmm. And if this was going to be the last episode, that would not have been a terrible way to do it.
But now we know we were very much corrected.
Yes.
So we have more.
Which I'm excited about. Yes. I'm very excited very about. Excited. I just think I kept thinking it's so funny that every time the door opens, Burnham is rushing to close the browser.
Like she's watching. She's just watching a video of her mom. I'm sure I know. Anyone walking in would be like, oh, I understand.
Yeah, this but she's like, ah. I'm like, yo, you look mad suspicious.
Instead, it's like, man, she's always watching porn in there. What is the deal? Like,
what's up?
But she won't make eye contact with me after I walk in the room every time.
It's very personal. I got it. But I thought the tech was very cool. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And that also makes this like sort of resolution of their relationship. It's kind of interesting. I think someone had suggested the possibility of like, what if the Red Angel is able to go back in time and make it so that Michael Burnham doesn't lose her parents
and never lives with Spock.
Never lives with Spock, and therefore, I think there was someone on our Slack channel actually who said that to us.
Yeah,
and yeah, I was like, okay, like if that's the idea. And then maybe that's why Spock never mentions he has a sister.
I would have loved that.
Would you?
Only because I like the cleanness of it,
but
right?
But that would eliminate all the other relationships in the history that we have. Like, yes. I don't like that. That's like what the Flash kept doing. Remember watching that show? And they're like, let's reset the clock again. I'm like, come on, guys.
How many Marvel references?
That's a DC one. That's a DC reference.
So many comic references.
I'm a geek. We're watching a geek show.
No, but I...
Wrong geekdom.
I think the biggest kind of issue that I struggle with is, again, we've introduced Spock into the show, and I keep trying to figure out, well, how come he never mentions Burnham, right? In thinking about the Spock that we know in the future.
Because his Captain Kirk is a Lothario. He's a creeper.
I'm also always trying to figure out like what happened. And now we're at this point where their relationship is reconciled, which you would think that, oh, they've got this lovey brother sister thing. You know, so I'm still kind of anticipating at some point they have this big falling out and they never speak again. But that's just me.
Or somebody dies.
Ooh, Mariah with the great theories all the time.
We'll see.
Burnham dies.
That's how the entire series wraps.
Yep.
You guys ready to do our awards for the episode?
Yes. Stamets. No, just kidding.
You have a Stamets back tattoo now. I've been meaning to ask you about that.
Pretty much.
When did you go get that? It's a bit much.
That's what I was doing last week. I was getting my Stamets ink.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow it up with some mycelium network on the shoulder there. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so our favorite performance. I think we all came to the consensus that we like Sonya Sahn this episode.
Kima Greg rocked it.
Yeah, Dr. Burnham, Michael's Dr. mom. Burnham. For anyone who's not familiar with the name, although I think I've said it like a billion times.
Yes.
Her performance this episode, like everything was so contingent upon her being able to sell that relationship and have that emotional punch at the end. And I think she did a fantastic job.
Yeah, the ability to go from standoffish and cold to compassionate.
In like a logical manner.
In a way that was authentic and believable, mm-hmm. I think is more difficult than people would normally give it credit for.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
And our favorite for behind the scenes for the crew.
Our visual effects team.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rocking the shit out of the sets, all of the phasers and the fights.
Holograms,
all of that facial stuff going on Leland's body with all the little nanoprobes, all the robots. It all looked great.
The force field, containment field mm-hmm. thing, everything. I mean, the visual effects team rocked it. Yep.
They've been killing it this entire season.
Like, yeah, yeah.
This one was just like a nice culmination of like mm-hmm. so many aspects, and that there might have been some like fun practical things, I think, with some makeup, and then there were some fun, you know, like lots of computer generated things. It was a good mixture.
I agree. We all agree, obviously.
That's why we gave the awards.
That's why we gave the awards.
That's how it works. It's a unanimous vote here.
So then let's go ahead and do our honorable mentions. Clyde, you want to kick things off? Do you have someone?
I got a couple. For cast, Giorgio. I really liked just how she showed up. I mean, it's no secret I'm a huge Michelle Yeoh fan. But I thought that she continued to deliver just a great performance. The subtleties, the one-liners, the jokes with Ash, and the just killer fight scene with Control/Leland. I thought as a performance go, she nailed it. And then in terms of crew, you know, we've kind of mentioned them, but the writers, the one-liners, like the
solid
comedy,
yeah, the
comedic elements in this episode were just fantastic. We each have our favorite one-liners, so I think between the writing and Giorgio's performance, Michelle Yeoh's performance, I was really impressed with this episode.
Mariah,
controversial coming from me, but I really liked Ash Tyler on this episode.
What?
So
that
shocking.
That is controversial. Wow.
Maybe it was just because I thought he was going to die, but I think it was more. I really enjoyed his sort of chemistry going on with Giorgio, and I think that the two of them really played well off of each other, and it made me more excited to see them as sort of like these mischievous double agents.
You just like the way he took that shank to the ribs.
I did. I love a good death scene. And then crew-wise, I really liked the direction of this particular episode and the director, Maja. She started out as an editor for a long time, and I think you can see that in the way that this was shot, in that there's lots of like sort of longer, continuous shots. There's a lot of fun back and forth in between the locations. You know, we're kind of in a lot of shows when you have an A plot and a B plot, you spend like a big chunk of time with A plot and then like a little chunk with B and then another big chunk with A. But this episode, I felt like we were consistently going back and forth between the two sort of plot points of, you know, of Dr. Burnham and Burnham interacting and having this sort of rekindling of their relationship and what's going on the planet, but then also what's going on with Control on the Section 31 ship with Leland and sort of Leland becoming this new creature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you guys on your honorable mentions. I mean, I would echo that the editing or the writing was like really fantastic. And it's really fun when I think you get the role to finally start piecing together a lot of these mysteries, these lingering mysteries, and how they did all of that and kept everything running just so smoothly and fluid and engaging. Yeah, I was really impressed with how the script was brought to life as well by the directing. And yeah.
High fives all around.
High fives. Nice. Guys, I think that's it. I think we've wrapped this up. Obviously, next week we're going to go have some more stories with the Vulcans and see how they tie into this whole thing with the red dots.
Do you mean the Klingons?
Oh, shit. Seasons. I did it.
Still the same thing.
I did it, didn't I? Klingons.
I mean,
what's a Borg? I don't remember.
I was like, damn, did I miss something in the preview? Like, what happened?
I know you said that, and I was like, I think he means the Klingons.
I am to Vulcans and Klingons as Mike, our fearless captain, is like to Spike.
Yes.
To Spike. Like Spock and Pike had a baby. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up there. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. We want to also remind you guys that if you want to check us out, you can follow us on our various social media platforms. Clyde, where can they find you?
On Twitter at Clyde Haynes, or on the web, you can reach me at keyandclyde.com, K-E-I and Clyde.com.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Mariah Gossett. That's MYRRIAH and then GOSSETT.
And I'm at Baron Von Grant. I apologize for that screen name. I don't know why I came up with that, I guess. And you can also follow us, our Star Trek Twitter at Star Trek Pod. I think that one's great. It's pretty awesome to follow. I like all the posts on there. And you can also help support us over at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. We appreciate all of the support of you patrons. You guys keep our show going. You keep fuel in our engines and great story in our hearts. I don't know what I'm saying. Hey, I'd also like to point out that Mike's going to be back to captain this next week, so you won't have to deal with me and whatever mess this is. We will be back next week. Oh, and we're proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater!
Clyde, you wrote that down real quick, and I almost forgot. Yeah. So go check out electricsweater.com, where you can find a bunch of TV-related podcasts, and go support our fellow Potters out there. Potters?
Sure.
Casters.
Until next week.
We're all just Harry Potter characters.
All we do is talk about Harry Potter. I would be okay with that. Live long and prosper.